start over, pump enough microorganisms into the soil, plant the right seeds, and this world could bloom again. In time.
Maybe. But it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be the world I knew.
It always comes back to you, doesn't it, Deathstalker? Typical Aristo, seeing everything in terms of himself. Viramond isn't the only world to get trashed by the Empress's whims. That's the kind of thing we fought the rebellion over, remember?
I know. I'm just feeling sorry for myself, for what I lost here. I don't really have the right, I suppose. My people lost everything, but I can at least avenge them. Valentine will pay for what he did here. I'll see him die, and die hard, and to hell with the consequences.
That's more like it. When all else fails, there's always revenge.
You're a woman of simple pleasures, Hazel.
That's what you think, stud.
She grinned at Owen, and he had to grin back. They stood together for a while, sharing the moment. Owen and Hazel looked slowly around them, and nothing looked back. Hazel frowned suddenly.
What?
I hate to sound morbid, but shouldn't there be a hell of a lot of bodies lying around? Or bits of bodies or something? All I can see is miles and miles of mud.
You've got a point. It is a bit tidy, isn't it? I wasn't aware that anyone had sent in a cleanup crew yet. Hang on a minute.
Oz, where are all the bodies?
Damned if I know, Owen. According to the records, there was a major battle right here, between the incumbent peasants and the invading forces.
Scan the area, Oz. Find me some bodies.
Scanning. Now that is interesting. I'm picking up some decayed animal remains mixed in with the mud, but absolutely no trace of anything human in any form. I have no explanation for this.
So what the hell happened to the bodies? Could Shub have paid a visit here, looking for raw materials for the Ghost Warriors?
Unlikely. Even allowing for the current scattered state of the Imperial fleet, such a visit would hardly have gone unnoticed and unreported. And you can forget about a cleanup crew. There isn't enough manpower available to deal with the needs of the living right now, never mind the dead. Unless Valentine had them removed.
Why would he do a thing like that?
To show he's sorry and make amends.
Hazel cut in, demanding to know what Oz was saying. Owen told her.
You're kidding. Valentine never apologized for anything in his life. He's proud of his degeneracy.
But I bet he does know what happened. It's the kind of thing he'd want to know. So I guess we'll just have to slog our way through the mud to my old standing, haul him out by the scruff of the neck, and ask him.
Good plan. Is it okay if I stick my gun in his ear while you question him?
Be my guest. Owen started out across the sea of mud in the direction he thought his old standing lay. The distance lay concealed behind a gray haze, grimly enigmatic. According to Oz, his old home was approximately 2 miles away, so that he and Hazel were just out of range of the castle's sensors. Unless Valentine had souped them up too, Owen smiled humorlessly. It didn't matter a damn if Valentine had. Let him know his death was coming. There might only be the two of them against an unknown number of enemies, but Owen didn't care. Even an army couldn't stop him now. The thought pulled him up short, and he scowled. More and more these days, he found himself thinking things that scared him. He wondered what he was becoming. The changes the Madness Mace had worked in him seemed to be accelerating, if anything. At first, he'd just been a man with an edge, and then a man with unfamiliar esp abilities, but he hadn't been merely human in a long time. Though he liked to pretend. He'd passed beyond esp into something else, something far more powerful. He was leaving his humanity behind, and he knew it. And it frightened him. Which was perhaps why he clung so desperately to his old human beliefs in honor and justice. He sighed, tired. He'd come a long way from the simple historian he'd been the last time he was here. He'd achieved a great deal, righted wrongs, and meted out justice high and low. But at the end of the day, there was much blood on his hands. Most of it from people who deserved to die, but not all. For every real villain he'd killed, there'd been 100 men who were just soldiers following orders, doing what they thought was right. Protecting a corrupt empire because the alternative seemed worse. Brave fighters who died because they were unfortunate enough to stand between Owen Deathstalker and his destiny. So many faceless dead. He dreamed of them sometimes. There was a child he'd crippled and killed in the grimy backstreets of Mistport. It was an accident. And she had been trying to kill him at the time. But none of that mattered. He'd struck out blindly in the bloody rage of battle, and the result was a young girl lying in the blood-spattered snow, crying helplessly for her crippled legs, till he put her out of her misery. He'd never forgiven himself for that, and never would. If there was any purpose in the warrior he'd become, it was to put an end to a system that produced children like that. And perhaps to protect people like that from people like him. That was what it meant to be a Deathstalker. He glanced across at Hazel, striding determinedly out beside him. Her long, ratty red hair fell down around a sharp and pointed face. Not conventionally pretty, but then Hazel Dark didn't believe in being conventional in anything if she could help it. Owen thought she was beautiful, but then he was biased. He loved her, quietly, secretly. Just slogging through the clinging mud, on her way to face unknown foes and probably overwhelming odds, she looked calm and confident and ready for action at a moment's notice. They'd spent a lot of time together, faced death and saved each other's lives, and still Owen wasn't sure if they were anything more than comrades in arms. She wasn't at all the kind of woman he'd thought he'd fall in love with, and certainly not the kind of woman he was supposed to marry, to continue the centuries-old Deathstalker line, but he loved her nonetheless. Or was it because she was nothing like his imagined future bride? Hazel was bright and funny, honest when it suited her, and the bravest woman he'd ever known. Not to mention hell on wheels with any weapon you could name. He admired her immensely, but was careful to keep it to himself. She'd only take advantage. She was confident when he was not, cautious when he forgot to be, and she never lost sight of what they were fighting for. He never told her he loved her. He just knew that if he ever mentioned the word, she'd leave him flat. Hazel had made it clear on more than one occasion that she didn't believe in things like love. They tied you down, made you vulnerable, and led to subjects like commitment and trust and openness, none of which had any place in Hazel's life. So he loved her from afar, accepted what warmth and friendship she offered on her own terms, and hoped for better things. They were together, and if that was all he could have, it was more than he'd ever had before.
Why are we walking? I made sure they loaded gravity sleds on board before we left.
Sleds would show up on the standing scanners. We, on the other hand, have proved invisible to most scanners ever since we passed through the maze. Just another useful side effect that no one understands. So we walk, and hopefully slip through Valentine's defenses unnoticed.
Hate walking. Makes my back ache. If God had meant us to walk, he wouldn't have given us anti-grav.
Admire the scenery.
Ha, bloody ha. Last time I walked through anything like this, all the field toilets had failed at once.
Walking is supposed to be very good for you.
So is eating sensibly and abstinence, and I hate them too. I'm warning you right now, Deathstalker. I'd better get to kill a hell of a lot of people at your standing, or there's going to be trouble.
Oh, I think I can guarantee that. The one thing you can be sure of on this desolate world is that we have absolutely no friends at all at the Deathstalker's standing.
The Deathstalker's standing was a great stone castle set on top of a hill, its pale gray walls marked here and there by damage and burns from energy weapons, from the occasion when the Empire had laid siege to the castle to capture its then-lord, David Deathstalker. He died rather than give it up, but they took the castle anyway in the end. Now it suffered the occupation of Lord Valentine Wolfe and his cronies. The other aristocrats liked to think of themselves as Valentine's partners, but there was nothing of equals in their relationship. The Wolfe had come to Viramond for his own purposes, only some of which he had deigned to explain, and the others had followed because they had no choice. He was their only hope of undoing the successes of the rebellion and putting them back in power again. Not for them the lesser glories of trade and influence. They wanted, needed to be, lords and masters. They were also there because he held their lives in the palms of his hands, but they tried not to think about that unless they were forced to. But nothing else could have persuaded such aristocratic movers and shakers to ally themselves so closely with the notorious Valentine Wolfe. He was mad, bad, and dangerous to know, as he would have been the first to admit, but he had something, a weapon of such potential that they couldn't risk losing it. While joining with the despised wolf, they bet their lives they could outthink or outmaneuver him at some future point, which was a sign of just how desperate they were. Valentine sat at his ease in the Lord's chair in the great dining hall of the castle, and watched tolerantly as his cronies wrecked the place. They were partly drunk from too many bottles of wine with a good dinner, and now they were laughing and braying as they threw food around and overturned the furniture. The Lord Silvestri was throwing his knives at the family portraits hanging on the walls, the Deathstalkers down the ages. He was aiming for the eyes and hitting them more often than not. The Lord Romanoff had pulled down a precious tapestry and was wearing it like a shawl as he drank brandy straight from the bottle. The Lord Kartakis was stamping back and forth on top of the table, apparently believing he was dancing to the ribald song he was singing defiantly off key. Valentine smiled at them as on errant children and allowed them their fun. There wasn't much for them to do, and they had been cooped up in the castle for a long time. And Valentine did so like to see the Deathstalker's precious things being violated, as he would someday destroy the man himself. Valentine Wolfe sat in a chair far too large for him, one long leg slung over its arm, his other foot up on the table. Dressed as always, all in black, to reflect his thoughts and temperament, his pale white face surrounded by long dark ringlets of oiled scented hair, his mouth a scarlet slash, and his eyes heavy with mascara, he looked the very picture of the utter villain he strove to be. And the drugs, the glorious drugs, ran riot in his system, as they always had. It had been truly said of Valentine that he had never met a chemical he didn't like, and if you could smoke it, swallow it, inject it, or stick it where the sun doesn't shine, Valentine was right there at the front of the line, ready to give it a try. He saw his chemically enhanced mind as an artist's work in progress, and was constantly striving to perfect it. The ultimate high was still out there somewhere, and Valentine pursued it tirelessly. To that end, he'd taken the rare and immediately addictive Esper drug, even though he knew it killed a small but significant percentage of those who took it. Valentine survived, of course, probably because his radically transmuted body chemistry couldn't be affected with anything less than fuming nitric acid. The drug had given him minor telepathic powers, along with complete control of his own autonomic nervous system, and his thoughts moved along strange and unfamiliar tracks. He threw one drug on top of another, maintaining a complex balance through sheer effort of will. As a result, his thoughts and emotions were now both more and less than human, and his companions found him increasingly difficult to comprehend. Valentine thought of himself as the first in a new breed of humanity, like the Hayden Men, an alchemical step forward, or perhaps sideways, on the evolutionary ladder. He watched Carlos Silvestri throw his knives again and again, tearing the eyes out of great men just because he could. And to prove to everyone that he wasn't afraid of the mighty Owen Deathstalker. Silvestri was a tall, thin man, all long limbs and sudden angles. He dressed in shades of red, the traditional color of his clan. It didn't suit him. His face was round and puffy, as though it hadn't yet decided what it wanted to be when it grew up, though the man had to be at least 40. He shaved his head bald and plucked out his other hairs. He was good with a knife and better with a sword. He would have made a great swordsman and duelist if only he'd had the courage of his convictions. But the Silvestri had always been a very cautious man, who preferred to watch from the sidelines and work through underlings and never ever get his hands dirty himself. He'd never forgiven Finlay Campbell for the assassination of his good friend, William St. John, and had spent much time and money on plans to have the Campbell killed, but none of them succeeded. Now, with Finlay a man of power and substance once again, and the Silvestri's powers drastically reduced by a randoms deal and the emergence of Blue Block, Carlos Silvestri had been forced to turn to Valentine as his only possible savior. And if that had turned out very differently from what he'd intended, it just put a little emphasis into the throw of his knives. Valentine smiled and turned his attention to Peter Romanoff, that fat and ruddy man wrapped in a torn masterpiece. Peter believed a man should be recognized by the breadth and achievement of his appetites, and indulged each sense till they groaned under the weight of his will. Sometimes he ate till he hurt, vomited, and then fell on his food again. There was in him a hunger that would not be satisfied, no matter how he tried. His people obeyed his every whim, or if they didn't, he had them killed and replaced with those who would. Peter was an aristocrat's aristocrat, and he had taken Random's deal hard. Not for him the lesser power and rewards of mere business. He went looking for an ally, a great man of influence who would put things back the way they were, the way they should be. A man of vision and destiny. Unfortunately, all he could find was Valentine. But the wolf at least had a plan, which was more than most, and Peter couldn't help but admire a man whose taste for indulgence actually surpassed his. So Peter and Valentine made a pact, and if the Romanov found the source of their power base to be somewhat distressing, there was always another meal and another bottle from the Deathstalker's excellent wine cellar to help distract him. And finally, there was Athos Kartakis. A short and swarthy man with a flashing smile and a temperament that could change in a moment from brightest day to darkest night. He collected insults and saw dueling as a sport. He never accepted first blood, always going for the kill. People tended to be very careful what they said around the young Lord Kartakis. He dressed well but sloppily and had married badly but was too stubborn to admit it. He broke his wife's will till she flinched when he spoke to her, and his children kept their distance. But he did like to drink and sing and tell off-color stories, and as a lord he was never short of eager companions, for Athos could be very generous when the mood was upon him. Which was how he came to be nearly bankrupt by his 20th year. His clan had never been more than a fairly minor house, and generations had been spending money faster than it came in. Kartakis had inherited many debts, and wasted no time in adding a number of his own. Creditors prefer to forget their bills rather than risk fighting a duel over them, but even so, everyone knew the true state of affairs, and Kartakis knew that they knew. The deal Blue Block brokered with Random had been the last straw. Take away his lordship, and Kartakis had nothing left. He'd never survive as a businessman, if only because he'd made so many enemies in trade, and so he pawned what was left of his soul to Valentine. For after the wolf's plan led to inevitable triumph, all those involved stood to become very wealthy indeed. Valentine watched his people at their play and thought pleasantly about the day he wouldn't need their support anymore and could have them all killed in slow and interesting ways. He'd just begun to number the ways and select his very favorite when the view screen on the wall chimed politely. Valentine raised a painted eyebrow. He'd given the servants to understand that he wasn't to be interrupted at his dinner for anything less than a major emergency, and after he'd had that footman flayed from the waist down, they learned to follow his instructions to the letter. So he accepted the call and directed his cronies to hush themselves.
Shh!
They fell silent immediately and looked interestedly at the view screen, grateful for anything unexpected to relieve their boredom. The screen cleared to show that sinister butterball of a man, the ex-lord Gregor Schreck. The Schreck sat behind an ugly but functional wooden table covered with ragged piles of papers and reports. His fat face looked even more unpleasant than usual, and his deep-set eyes moved only briefly over the three aristocrats before dismissing them contemptuously. He nodded curtly to Valentine, the nearest he ever got to polite behavior, and plunged right in without further niceties.
"You're in trouble, Wolf. Someone's been talking, and they know where you are. Parliament sent a force to investigate what you're up to on Viramond."
"Really? And just how large an army are they sending?"
"It's worse than an army. They've sent Owen Deathstalker and Hazel Dark."
The three aristocrats looked quickly at one another and began to babble unhappily. Valentine waved for them to be quiet. The wolf smiled slowly at the Shrek's image on the view screen, his great scarlet grin spreading across his death-like face.
"Dear Owen, I have so been looking forward to meeting him. I can't wait to see what he thinks what I've done with his old plays. When can I expect our illustrious hero and his warlike companion?"
"Hell, he and the bitch have probably already landed by now. I'm not as well connected as I used to be. Word takes longer to reach me these days."
"The Death Stalker can't be here. The security systems would have taken out his ship, or the sensors would have warned us."
"Oh, don't be silly. This is Owen Deathstalker we're talking about. You are still otherwise on top of things at your end?"
"Of course. You supply the product. I've got people set up to move it. Never thought I'd end up a drug runner at my time of life."
I'd have thought it was an occupation you were ideally suited for.
The Silvestri was idly paring his fingernails with the edge of one of his knives.
But then everyone rises to their true level eventually.
At least I'm not a fugitive from what passes for justice these days. I may be keeping my head down, but I still have my tower and my people.
But you're not a lord anymore.
The Romanov was sucking grease off his fingers.
We haven't allowed Blue Block and the traitor Random to strip our rightful heritage from us.
And we will be lords again, even if we have to kill everyone else in the Empire who says otherwise.
Big talk from a little man.
Gregor grinned mockingly, secure in the knowledge that the Kartakus was light years away and couldn't get to him.
We tried fighting. We lost. Our only hope now is the Wolf's plan. And God help us all if it goes wrong.
If it goes right, I'll make gods of you all. We will return in glory, and no power beyond that even Lionstone wielded. Ah, but that's the future. Tell me of the present, Gregor. How goes the Cabal?
Growing every day. More and more aristocrats and politicians are expressing secret support for a return to the old ways. No one's willing to come out in public, but they're all supplying people and money to help expedite your plan. No telling how many of them will actually stand up and fight when the time comes, but I'll settle for them just abstaining at the right moment. Everyone's worried. Everyone's making deals. No one knows what to believe or who to trust anymore. The rebels and their pet parliament may think they're running things, but their precious new regime is built on sand.
And the sands of time are running out for all of them. How I do love a good metaphor. Now be a good boy, Gregor, and make yourself scarce, I must think. I have to prepare a suitable welcome for dear Owen and the redoubtable Hazel Dark.
Watch yourself. They aren't human anymore. If they ever were, they'll take a lot of killing.
If it was easy, there'd be no fun in it, would there? Goodbye, Gregor.
Let them come. We can handle them.
We can. I'm not so sure about you.
Carlos Silvestri flushed pinkly, a knife in each hand.
I can hold up my end.
Relax.
The Romanov was rooting through the remains of his dinner, in case he'd missed anything.
With all the guards and security we've set up here, we could hold off an entire army till they starve to death.
Anyone else, maybe. But this is the Deathstalker and the Dark Woman. I've heard stories about them. Of the things they did during the street fighting on Golgotha. It said they worked miracles. That they were hit point blank by a disruptor cannon and survived. Someone said they died and brought themselves back to life.
Stories. There are always stories.
In this case, they might just be true. But not to worry, dear comrades. Let them come how they will. They'll find nothing here but death.
The others didn't look too appreciative of Valentine's humor, but then they rarely did. Valentine's sense of humor had changed, evolving along with his alchemical transformation, and was no longer to everyone's taste. Just another way in which he had left lesser mortals behind. He sighed and got to his feet, the signal that dinner was officially over. He dabbed daintily at his scarlet lips with a napkin and started towards the door. The three aristocrats made varying sounds of alarm despite themselves.
Lord Valentine.
Valentine took his time, turning back to face them.
Yes, dear friends? Was there something else?
The drug. We need the drug.
Oh, of course. What was I thinking? It's time for your daily dose, isn't it? How very forgetful of me.
He strolled back to the table and took a small vial of pills from his pocket. The three men who had once been lords and masters of their destiny looked at the vial and tried not to appear too desperate. Valentine was quite capable of dragging out his little game for ages, if he felt like it. He could make them do anything, anything at all, at this time of the day, and they all knew it. The Esper drug had originally been discovered by a small group of scientists looking for something else. To their surprise, they found that they had created a drug that could give everyone who took it regularly a small but real gift for telepathy, whether they were Espers or not, which had always been thought impossible. The original Lord High Dram, the Widowmaker, had seized control of the drug and the scientists and put it to his own use, But his plans, like his imagination, were somewhat limited. After his death, Valentine took control of the drug and the single laboratory that produced it. Marvelous as the drug was, there was, of course, a catch or two. First, the drug was highly addictive. Once you'd started taking it, you had to continue for the rest of your life or die horribly. And second, a small percentage of the people who took it died instantly. Valentine weighed the pros and cons, but not for long. He took his first dose on the same day he discovered the drug existed. It was only a drug, after all, and Valentine had never believed in letting a chemical get the better of him. The three ex-lords had also taken the drug and survived. They hadn't been anywhere as willing as the Wolf, but it had been his condition for allowing them to join him in mass-producing the drug. A drug that could be used as a weapon to undermine and then control first the Parliament, and then the many populations of the civilized worlds. For whoever owned and controlled production of such an attractive and endlessly addictive drug would have complete and utter control over everyone who took it, for as long as they lived. For those few who might try to hold out against it, it would be easy enough to slip them the drug unnoticed. Everyone has to eat and drink, and one dose was all it would take. Valentine had always believed the simplest plans were the best. So he handed out the precious pills, and the Silvestri and the Romanov and the Kartakis swallowed them down with more or less concealed eagerness, and everyone was reminded of just who was in charge of things in the old Deathstalker standing. Valentine put the vial of pills away, and had the grace not to smile triumphantly at them. They would have liked to kill him for the secret and regain control of their lives, but they didn't dare. There were things only Valentine knew, and none of the aristocrats were stupid enough to believe that they could make him tell them a single damn thing he didn't choose to. And they all knew that if he died, they died too, and however badly he died, they'd die worse. It was said that there were already people of power and influence within the Empire who were controlled by the drug, but Valentine kept the names to himself. Secrets were currency in the world of intrigue. And he did so like to spring little surprises on his friends and colleagues.
"I trust you enjoyed the dinner. Something a little different today."
The three aristocrats looked suspiciously at the dinner table, trying to remember if anything had seemed out of the ordinary. None of them would put it above Valentine to have slipped one of his special chemical creations into the food. His sense of humor again.
No. I wouldn't waste any of my special concoctions on such an unappreciative audience. Rather, I thought we might all enjoy a taste of the last real produce exported from the food planet of Viramond.
For a long moment, none of them got it. There was no food left on the planet anymore. Everyone knew that. And then the Silvestri's eyes widened, and he put a hand to his mouth as the color drained from his face.
The dead! The people of Viramond? We've been eating?
Yes, you have. And with such good appetite, too. Would you care for an after-dinner mint? Ah me, so many taboos, so little time.
And with a cheery smile and a modest inclination of the head, Valentine Wolf left to plan the surprises he had in mind for Owen Deathstalker and Hazel Dark. In the Great Rebellion, many Lord Standings turned out to be built on sand. The great Deathstalker Castle had been built on a huge promontory of solid granite. From the front and the two sides, open plains stretched away in all directions. To the rear, there was a solid drop of hundreds of feet, ending in nasty, jagged rocks lashed by a vicious incoming tide, which made the standing both extremely easy to defend and very hard to sneak into. Perfect thinking, security-wise, though that wasn't why Owen had chosen to place his standing there. He just liked the view. Of course, he'd never expected to have to break into his own castle, so when he and Hazel finally came in sight of his old home, they had to stop and do some hard thinking. A frontal or side approach was out of the question. Their special nature might make them invisible to the castle's sensors, but they were still perfectly visible to the naked eye. And Owen had no doubt that the moment a sentry identified them, Valentine would open up with every weapon at his command. It was what Owen would have done. And he didn't share Hazel's faith in their invulnerability. So, after a certain amount of thought, discussion, and open argument, they finally decided that the only practical way was round the back. It meant retreating some of the way they'd already come, and a slow descent down to the wave-lashed shore at the foot of the great promontory, but eventually they stood together amid the flying spray, looking up at hundreds of feet of sheer bare granite.
There used to be birds here. Well, things very like birds. Soaring and wheeling on the wind, crying out in the saddest voices you ever heard. And now they're all gone. They even killed the damned birds.
Just another reason to take revenge. Nothing like a little stoked rage to warm a body on a long, cold climb.
It's very cold here. I don't think I'll ever be warm again.
Owen started up the dark granite wall, climbing slowly and carefully, and after a moment, Hazel followed him. It felt good to get up out of the spray and leave the deafening pounding of the waves behind. The wind rushed around them, trying to pluck them from the sheer rock face, but it couldn't budge them, so it just settled for blowing tears from their eyes. Owen concentrated on the wall before him, moving confidently from one foot and handhold to another. After the first 100 feet, he decided firmly that he wasn't going to look down again till he was safely inside the castle. Great views aside, he'd never been fond of heights. And yet he moved increasingly easily up the bare cliff, his hands and feet instinctively finding crevices and supports he would have sworn weren't there till he needed them. Not for the first time, it was as though his body knew how to do something without having to be told. Owen brooded over that as he climbed. It was better than thinking about the drop below him. Since he passed through the madness maze, he'd become able to do all kinds of things he never could before. He'd emerged so much more than he had been. The talents came and went, and he couldn't always be sure they'd be there when he needed them. Even after all this time, he was no nearer understanding their nature. He glanced across at Hazel, skittering calmly up the smooth granite surface like an insect on a pane of glass, and had to look away. He really hoped he didn't look like that. He made himself look again, and met Hazel's eyes.
I know what you're thinking.
Wouldn't be the first time. I assume you had no prior knowledge of rock climbing before today either?
Uh-uh. This is almost easier than walking. It's as though my hands and feet know where to go without my looking, as if they've always known. Spooky. I wonder what else we could do if we just put our minds to it. I've always dreamed of flying.
I wouldn't try that out just now. Those rocks below seem particularly unforgiving.
Good point.
They climbed on in silence. Owen couldn't help noticing that neither of them were even breathing hard.
Do you ever think about the things we can do? What we're becoming? We're not Espers. I had a number of major players from the Esper Underground scan me at my request. They couldn't detect the slightest trace of Esper in me. They had no idea at all how to do the things I do.
I try not to think about it too much. We were given gifts. Gifts that have kept us alive in situations where anyone else would have perished horribly. They helped us overthrow the Empire. Why look such a gift horse in the mouth?
Just because something has a leg at each corner and eats hay, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a horse. Espers, for all their powers, are still human. That's one of the reasons we fought the Rebellion. But we were changed by a device not born of human hands or thoughts. An alien device. Who knows what it was really intended to do, what it was supposed to produce?
Transfiguration. It made us better than we were. That was its function. I remember that much.
But what do we mean by better? A human definition or an alien one? And would the two necessarily have anything in common?
Why the hell are you asking me? You're the brains in this partnership. I just hit things.
I'm tired of asking myself questions I can't answer, or else coming with answers that are just too damn disturbing. Our only hope of enlightenment was the maze itself, and the maze is gone, destroyed. And with it went all our hopes of discovering exactly what was done to us and why.
So why torment yourself?
Hazel stopped to look at him, as she realized he'd stopped climbing.
Because I'm scared of what I might be becoming. I'm scared I'm losing my humanity, leaving it behind. I don't want to be a god, or a monster. Have you ever thought that we might end up as distant from ordinary men and women as the Hayden Men, or the Wampir, or the AIs from Shub? What if we become so alien that we forget who and what we are?
Stop it, Owen. You're just spooking yourself. I don't feel any different from the person I used to be. I still believe in the same things, want the same things, hate the same things. I just get to hit a better class of people. I'm still me. My abilities make it that much easier for me to achieve the things I want.
She started climbing again, and after a moment, Owen followed her.
I think it's subtler than that. One small change might not mean much, but put enough of them together. I mean, we don't even have the first idea of how our powers work, why they come and go the way they do. Sometimes I can blow apart a whole building just by thinking about it, and other times I can't even manage things the most minor Esper could do with a half a thought. One minute I'm invulnerable, the next I'm bleeding like a stuck pig. There are times we're just fighters with an edge, and others when we're all but gods. We're not in control of our powers. They control us.
Look, if you're trying to scare me, you're succeeding, so cut it out. Our condition didn't exactly come with a user's manual, so all we can hope is to learn by doing. Seems to me the more we use our powers, the more control we'll gain over them.
It's dangerous to use any new weapon without checking out the small print. There could be side effects we haven't noticed yet. Maybe we're using up our lives, shortening our lifespans. The energy that powers our abilities has to come from somewhere. The candle that burns twice as brightly burns half as long. And we have burned brighter than suns.
God, you're in a morbid mood today. I feel fine. I feel better than fine. Maybe we'll live forever.
And another thing. Why did we all come out of the maze with different abilities?
Why not? We were all different people.
Yes, but some of what we do is similar to Esp. Jack and Ruby are fire starters, and Giles could teleport. I've got something like psychokinesis. But how the hell do you do what you do? What are these different versions of yourself that you're able to summon up during a fight?
Damned if I know. I just call and they come. None of them ever stuck around long enough afterwards to answer questions. Giles thought they were other versions of me from different time tracks. People I might have become if things had gone differently.
Yeah, but time tracks are just a theory. No one's ever been able to prove the existence of different dimensions, let alone make contact with them. Maybe the other yous are just products of your imagination, made real by the power within you.
No way. I've seen some of these other me's. I don't have that good an imagination.
Yes, but...
Owen! I don't know. And this is not the time or the place to be having a discussion. If either of us gets distracted and slips, they will be scraping what's left of us off the rocks below with a palette knife. Now stop asking questions and get your ass in gear or I'll kick your butt all the way up this damn wall.
You would, wouldn't you?
Damn right. Now move it!
They climbed the rest of the way in silence. Eventually, they came to the great circular opening in the granite wall that led to the massive caves burrowed out under the standing. Owen used to keep his personal flyers and other vehicles there when he was in residence. Since there'd been no sign of any craft parked near or around the standing, it made sense to assume that Valentine and his cronies had docked their ships in the caves too, which meant the opening would still be clear. And Owen knew of a secret passage that led directly from the main cave to the master bedroom, a family secret. The only other person Owen ever told was David, who was dead now. They moved silently up to the lip of the opening and clung to the cold stone, still as limpets, and listened for any sign that their presence had been noted. After a while, Owen allowed himself to relax a little and gestured to Hazel that he was going to move up over the ledge and into the cave. She nodded and he took a deep breath, steadying himself. Theoretically, there could be any number of armed guards present looking after the parked ships, but it didn't seem likely. By any normal standards, the caves were unreachable. Unfortunately for Valentine, Owen and Hazel hadn't been in hailing distance of normal for some time now. Owen took a firm grip on the granite ledge and hauled himself up and over and into the cave in one swift, fluid motion. He was on his feet in a second, disruptor in hand, searching for a target, but all was quiet. Four luxurious yachts stood together, powered down, along with a handful of single-man flyers, but otherwise the place was deserted. Not a guard in sight. Owen padded stealthily forward, ears pricked for the slightest sound, but all he could hear was his own shallow breathing. He lowered his gun and exhaled silently.
All clear, Hazel.
She was with him in a moment, hurrying across the ceramic floor, projectile gun in one hand, grenade in the other. She glared suspiciously about her.
There ought to be someone here. It doesn't make sense to leave expensive ships like these just standing around unguarded.
Who's going to steal them? Valentine and his private army, the only people here.
What about security cameras?
Oz is taking care of them. He still has secret access codes for all the castle security computers. Right now, he's editing their signals so we don't appear. This was all covered in planning sessions, Hazel. I do wish you'd attend the briefings before we go on missions.
What, and do you out of the fun of explaining everything to me? You'd never forgive me.
He turned in a slow circle, checking the corners and shadows.
I still don't like this. It's too easy. If I was as guilty of as many nasty things as Valentine, I'd want all my exits and entrances thoroughly guarded.
Yeah, he's probably relying on the security systems. I did install the very best. And those souped-up satellites of his would hold off any normal ship.
I've been thinking about that. What if they reported opening fire on us?
What if they did? After the onslaught they handed out, they probably assumed we were so damaged we burned up during the descent.
You keep using that word probably. There's nothing very probable about Valentine Wolf. He's paranoid as hell. He doesn't think the way the rest of us do.
Hazel, trust me. This is my place. I know what I'm doing. Now please put away that gun and grenade before you have an unfortunate and very loud accident. I want to take a look around here.
What's there to see? It's a cave.
The first of several caves. When I was in charge here, we used the extra caves to store all the items that there wasn't room for in the standing proper. When a family's been around for as long as mine, you'd be amazed how much junk you accumulate. Treasures, tributes, spoils of war and conquest. Plus, a number of my ancestors were collectors of various kinds. And you wouldn't believe the kind of things some people can obsess over when they have unlimited resources and far too much time on their hands. And of course, you don't dare throw any of it out for fear of future generations calling you a barbarian. You never know when some piece of centuries-old tat might suddenly become fashionable again, or come in handy to settle some ancient family feud or argument. So it all piles up, and you've got to do something with it. I used to display the best pieces in the castle itself, and dump the rest in the caves down here. It's all carefully catalogued somewhere. David said he was going to have a good clear-out once he moved in. But I don't think he had time in the end. Either way, I'll feel better once I've checked. I don't like surprises.
Owen moved off towards the back of the cave. Hazel rolled her eyes briefly at the polished ceiling and went after him, giving the parked yachts plenty of room in case they were armed with proximity alarms. In the end, Owen didn't get far. He stood before the entrance to the next cave, which was now blocked off by a glowing force field. He was standing very still, and Hazel could tell at once that something was wrong. She hurried over to join him, the gun back in her hand. She moved in beside him, and then stopped. Beyond the transparent energy field, the cave was packed from wall to wall and from floor to ceiling with dead bodies. Not respectfully lying on separate slabs or tables, but crammed together like cuts of meat or lengths of wood, packed in as tightly as possible. A temperature gauge on the wall by the opening showed that a freezer unit was maintaining the bodies at near zero. Some of the faces looked out at Owen and Hazel, an almost lifelike gleam shining from the frost in their frozen eyeballs.
Well, now we know what they did with the bodies.
Owen.
Not now. I want to check the other caves.
They went from cave to cave, from opening to opening, and they were all filled to capacity with the refrigerated dead of Viramond. Men, women, and children stacked together like logs, with no room for dignity. Some were wearing clothes, some weren't. Owen tried to estimate how many bodies there were, but even guessing from the massive size of the caves, he couldn't grasp it. The numbers were just too big. He stopped before the opening to the last cave and couldn't go any further. All the strength went out of him. Hazel stood beside him and put a comforting hand on his arm, but he hardly acknowledged it.
I feel like I ought to do something, but I don't know what. They were my people. They're still my people, even if they are dead. But I don't know what to do.
His hands had clenched into helpless fists. Hazel moved close beside him, trying to support and comfort him with her nearness.
I don't suppose this means much to you. After all, you were a clone legger.
I never saw the bodies. But sometimes I had nightmares. Why do you suppose Valentine...
Who knows why Valentine does anything anymore?
The wolf's crazy, but there's always a method to his madness. Think of all the time and effort it must have taken to collect all the bodies, bring them down here, and pack them in. He must have had a reason, or else why bother refrigerating them?
Knowing Valentine, it's probably a very disturbing reason. I say we find the bastard and ask him. And if I don't like his answers, I'm going to bounce him off the castle walls till his ears bleed.
Sounds good to me.
Owen led the way to the back of the Flyer Cave and opened a hidden door in the wall to reveal a narrow stone passage leading upwards. Lights came on in the tunnel, showing the way. Hazel was quietly impressed.
It leads to another secret door in what used to be my old bedchamber. From there, we have access to all the main areas of the castle. Internal security is mostly human rather than tech. Aristocrats don't like being spied on. Keep your hand near your sword, but leave your guns alone. Whatever happens, the sound of a gun would bring guards running from all directions. And I don't want a war. I just want Valentine.
Any other time, Hazel would have snapped at Owen for lecturing her on something so obvious, but she kept her peace. She could see the pain in him. Talking helped distract him. She followed him into the tunnel, and the door swung shut behind them. Their footsteps seemed very loud in the quiet. Then Owen stopped suddenly, turning his head back and forth.
What is it?
Something's not right.
I can't see anything.
Neither can I. But I can feel it, can't you?
Hazel concentrated, trying to reach out in the strange directions of which her mind was capable. And then Owen grabbed her roughly and threw her to the floor. From every side, disruptor beams filled the tunnel from nearby hidden gun ports. If they'd stayed standing, they'd have been shot to mincemeat.
So much for your secret passage, Deathstalker!
Hazel was trying to burrow down into the solid stone floor.
They must have got it out of David before he died. Try and go backwards towards the door.
Hell with that! I have my dignity! Wait till the beam shut off, and then we'll make a run for it while they're recharging!
One, they're staggered. They're not going to cut off. Two, the beams are angling lower. Now wriggle, dammit!
They moved back down the tunnel to the door as fast as they were able, the disruptor beams passing barely an inch or so above their bodies. They pushed and scraped along the rough stone floor, unable to raise their heads enough to see where they were going or how far they had to go. The energy beam dipped and seared the air just above them, flashing on and off, filling the tunnel with the stench of ionized air. Owen's clothes rucked up around him as he crawled backwards, slowing him down, and he could hear Hazel's several guns and ammo belts scraping along the floor, holding her back. He risked a glance at her, just in time to see a disruptor beam clip her raised elbow, vaporizing the sleeve and burning the exposed flesh. She grimaced, but didn't make a sound, and kept moving. The smell of burnt meat mingled briefly with the ozone. Owen redoubled his efforts, and then suddenly he lurched to a halt as his feet slammed up against the closed steel door. He pushed against it with all his weight, but it wouldn't budge. Owen's temper flared, and he kicked out with both feet. The heavy steel door flew open, half tearing off its hinges. He looked back at Hazel again. She'd raised her head slightly at the noise of the door opening, and a disruptor beam was heading right for her forehead. For Owen, time seemed to slow and stop, the energy beam crawling slowly through the air. And it was the simplest thing in the world for him to lunge forward and thrust his golden Hayden Man hand between Hazel and the beam, which ricocheted harmlessly away. Time crashed back to normal. Owen grabbed Hazel and then threw himself out of the tunnel and back into the main cave, dragging her with him. They hit the floor hard and rolled away from the opening, putting as much room as they could between themselves and the deadly tunnel. They lay together for a while, getting their breath back, and then rose just a little shakily to their feet.
So, still feel invulnerable?
Oh, shut up, Deathstalker. Don't you get tired of being right all the time?
She raised her arm gingerly and studied the burn with a curled lip.
Nasty. But it'll heal. Hate to think what that beam would have done to my face. Thanks for the save, Stud.
Anytime.
Hazel looked at his golden hand.
I have to say I'm impressed. Your average disruptor beam can vaporize steel plating in under a second, but it just bounced off that golden fashion accessory of yours.
Yeah, the Haydenmen do good work.
Owen flexed the bright metal fingers just a little self-consciously.
One of these days, I really ought to sit down with some human scientists and have them analyze the hell out of this thing, see what its capabilities are. But I never seem to have the time. It's all rush, rush, rush when you're a rebel hero.
And a bounty hunter.
That too. Speaking of which, I have another idea on how to get to dear Valentine.
Hold everything. Your last idea didn't turn out so damn hot.
And you're not going to like this one much either. But we can't hang around here. Those disruptors must have set off all kinds of alarms once they were triggered. There'll be guards here soon. Lots of them, armed to the teeth.
Let them come! I could use something to work off my frustrations on.
You're missing the point, and not for the first time. The guards could pin us down here while Valentine and his cronies make their escape. And I'll see this place reduced to rubble before I let that happen. This time, Valentine is going to pay for his crimes. In blood.
Every now and again, you remind me of why I stick around with you. All right, Deathstalker. I just know I'm going to regret asking, but what is this marvelous new plan of yours?
There's another secret passage, one I never told David about. A Death Stalker always keeps some secrets to himself.
There's a catch. I just know there's a catch.
Oh, yes. The entrance to this tunnel is on the other side of the first cave on the left. The only way to get to it is past the piled-up bodies.
Oh, nice one, Owen. How the hell are we supposed to do that? Drag the bodies out one at a time? How long will that take?
Too long. The guards would be upon us before we'd barely started. No, there's only one way. We're going to have to crawl through the mass of bodies, forcing our way through brute strength till we reach the far side.
No.
Hazel.
No, are you crazy? Dig our way through corpses, hand over hand? I won't do it, Owen. I'd rather stand and fight here.
And die?
I'm not doing it.
You used to be a clone legger.
I never saw the bodies. Just parts in the freezers. And even that was enough to give me bad dreams. I was already planning to leave the clone leggers even before I met you. We can't do this, Owen. It's freezing in there, near zero.
We withstood worse. The guards will never detect us. They never think to look for us among the dead.
That's because no sane person would contemplate doing it. I can't, Owen. I just can't. It would be like crawling through the contents of the freezer units on the clone legger ship. Just like my nightmares.
No, it won't. This time, I'll be there with you. You have to do this, Hazel. It's the only way. And I can't do it without you.
You bastard, Deathstalker. You always did know how to fight dirty. All right. Let's do it. Before I get a rush of brains to the head and tell you to go to hell.
Just follow me. I'll lead the way.
Damn right you will.
Owen made for the cave. Out of the corner of his eye, he could see Hazel staring straight ahead, her face a cold mask, her eyes those of a frightened child. Owen had never seen her scared before. Not really scared. He realized he knew very little about her past life. He'd pieced together a few clues, ex-pirate, ex-clone legger, ex-confidence trickster, and bravo, and thought he had the whole picture. He should have known better. Owen searched for the right words to say.
So, you were already thinking of leaving the clone leggers before we met?
Yeah. They were too gross, even for me. And the pay was lousy.
Silly me. I thought it might have something to do with morality.
Don't you use the M word in my presence, Deathstalker.
They stopped before the entrance to the cave. Beyond the shimmering, transparent force field, dead faces looked out at them. Hazel's hands fell to her guns, but they didn't comfort her.
Damn you, Deathstalker. Somebody's going to pay for this.
Hang on to that attitude. It'll come in very handy when we have to fight our way through Valentine's private army at the other end.
Overwhelming odds I can handle. I'm used to that. Now shut up and open the damn door. You can do that, can't you?
I'm working on it.
Owen studied the force field thoughtfully. He could always shoot out the controls, but that would be bound to set off alarms, and he didn't want to leave any clue as to where he and Hazel might have gone. Given time and the right equipment, Hazel could probably have persuaded the controls to shut down the field, but they didn't have either. Owen concentrated, and an idea came to him. He accessed his AI.
Oz, do you still have the security command overrides for the standing?
Of course. I have override codes for every system in the castle, and every system linked into the system since we left, unless David or Valentine and his people have changed them.
Not likely. David wouldn't have bothered, and Valentine hasn't had time to work his way past the protections and booby traps. Try it, Oz. Isolate this system, shut down this cave's force field, and then raise it again after we're in, without setting off any alarms.
You don't want much, do you? It's lucky for you that I'm such a superior model, top of the line for my time. But before I work my usual miracles, can I just point out that I have no control over the refrigeration units Valentine has installed in these caves? They're an entirely separate system that I have no access to. The temperature in the cave you propose to enter is cold enough to neuter a Mistwalt Hubhound. It's not actually zero, but it's as close as you're ever likely to encounter, short of opening an airlock and stepping out into deep space. Though I wouldn't put that past you either. Suffice to say that any normal human entering this cave would freeze to death extremely quickly, assuming the shock didn't get him first.
Hazel and I aren't normal, Oz. We haven't been for a long time. Open the cave.
Freezing air rushed out from the cave, steaming into the cavern like a thick fog. The bitter cold hit Owen and Hazel like a blow, and they flinched back from it despite themselves. They shuddered violently and held on to each other for support. There was no smell, no stench of death or decay. It was too cold for that. The bodies before them were perfectly preserved. Owen and Hazel moved reluctantly forward to get a better look. The cold air seared their lungs painfully as they breathed it. The nearest body was that of a woman, dressed in torn peasant's clothing, charred and blackened around the energy weapon wounds that killed her. Her face was a mess. Half of it was missing. Owen reached out a hand towards her, and then hesitated. His hand was trembling, but not from the cold. He didn't want to touch her.
If she's as cold as I think she is, you could get frostbite.
Not to worry. I used to know a lot of women like that at court. I thought I'd seen everything, that this wouldn't mean anything to me. But I was wrong.
When you stop feeling anything, it'll mean part of you has died too. The human part. But as bad as you feel, you're still going to do this, aren't you?
It's necessary.
Of course. You'd walk through hell itself for a chance to get to Valentine, wouldn't you?
Yes. He murdered my world.
Owen drew his disruptor, aimed it at the packed bodies before him, and fired. The energy beam tore a path through the frozen dead, creating a tunnel. The irresistible force of the beam cut through flesh and bone alike, vaporizing everything in its path, leaving behind half-bodies and stubs of limbs, surrounding a tunnel some 3 feet wide. It looked as if some monstrous worm or maggot had eaten through the dead on its way to some unknown, awful destination. Owen put away his disruptor and turned to Hazel.
We'll move through the tunnel for as far as it goes, and then you'll have to pull bodies in behind us to cover our tracks. The extra space I've created will give us room to maneuver bodies out of our way once I reach the end of the tunnel.
Nothing's going to stop you, is it, Deathstalker?
No. I know this is difficult for you, Hazel, but I need you. Do it for me.
All right, for you. But you're going to owe me one hell of a favor afterwards. It's going to be dark once we're inside the mass of bodies. How will we know where we're going?
I know where the hidden door is. I can feel it in my mind. All you have to do is follow me. Don't worry. It's not like there's any chance of you getting lost in there. Let's go.